sheets. Finish.
Okay, you should be going.
Okay. Am I expecting Larry this morning?
You should be here.
Okay.
Shit.
Can I take off my jacket or should I not do that?
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Does anyone not have sheets? Does anyone need a set of sheets? Okay. Last call. Anybody not have sheets? Okay. It is off. That was the hint. If you have a cell phone, do something with it.
Shotgun garbage.
Okay, good morning everyone and welcome. This is so exciting. This is absolutely unbelievable. This is the first time that the Y'Torah Mitzion Kollel has ever tried to have a Yarchi Kala, and we did it.
Yay.
So thank you everyone for coming. Now, someone asked me, just for clarification, the phrase Yarchei Kala, that phrase means the months of assembly. In the times of the Talmud, in Babel and Babylonia, they used to have 2 months, one at the beginning of the year and one at the end of the year, where a group of scholars would get together in a huge location. Hundreds, maybe thousands of scholars would come together from all over the land, and they would have a month of study. So that's why it was called Yarchei Kala. That's the origin of this phrase. So the notion that a group of people are going to come together to study is really an ancient tradition, and it's a great privilege and a great honor to share that with you. And we are indebted to quite a few people who helped make this happen. First and foremost, Bethia Strauss and Paul Quintus for sponsoring this conference. We are grateful for them for this support and for the support in general of the Kollel. Bethia is out of the country, so you'll tell her when she gets back how gewaldig it was. We have two women who served as the coordinators, the co-chairs behind the scenes to make sure that everything got done, and that is Mrs. Sippy Niger and Mrs. Sippy Rimmel and Mrs. Sima Niger. They're here somewhere. Sippy? Sima? And where's Sippy? Where's Sippy? I saw Simo was there. All right, you'll thank her when she gets here, because they put in a great deal of work coordinating. As you can see, it's not an easy task putting together all the speakers and the times and all the different pieces of the puzzle. We want to thank Congregation Or Torah, Rabbi Engel, and Noam Stadlin, the president, and Mo Herman especially, because Mo is the facilities guy who actually makes sure that the air conditioning is on and that the lights are on and everything works. So, which is good. If you're freezing, so then we thank Mo for that. This way nobody will fall asleep. We want to thank Midwest Conference Center for preparing a beautiful lunch for us this afternoon. We want to thank Shayna Weiss. Shayna, you greeted at the left side of the registration table. She's a new member of the Kollel team. She's helping Sam with many of the administrative key tasks in the office, and she's responsible for a lot of the logistics today. And Lisa Nagar, who is helping us greeting this morning. And finally, Sam Meadow, whom we all know and love, who makes sure that everything actually happens. So on to our topic today. Peering through the lattices, divine values. So I'd like to ask a question and explore the answer together with you. My question is, as observant as traditional Torah Jews, do we believe in a set of divine values? That's the question. So maybe we'll take a show of hands. If we believe in a set of Torah, Jewish, divine values, anyone who says yes? That's pretty good. I like that. So we're going to go with that. We're going to go with the majority, that we believe that there is such a thing as a set of Torah, divine, Jewish values. But what are they? And the bigger question that I'd like to deal with today is, how do we know? How do we understand? How do we inspire ourselves by understanding what is a divine value? What is a Jewish value? Where do we pick these things up from? Do we find it in the Newsweek that we get? Do we find it in some other media outlet? Do our kids tell it to us from school? Like, what's the litmus test of something, whether or not it is an authentic Torah value? So that's my question for the day. It's a pretty simple question. But this is a lifelong journey of exploration. So to do that, I'd like to present for your consideration three different models, three places we can look to find divine values. Now, it's peering through the lattices because sometimes you're going to have to look carefully. But these three models can help us understand better what our values truly are. And then we can go after this session and we can explore on our own. We're going to take these concepts and look around and see where can we find more of these divine values. So the three constructs that I want to submit to you today are the following, and we'll explore each of them. One is called descriptive, the other is prescriptive, and the third is inductive. And what I'd like to do is just begin with three stories that capture what I think we would call prescriptive. These three stories are describing something, and in this case it's one person. I want to focus on one person. And from here we can draw out some Torah values. The beginning of the journey starts with the fact that in your packets, the Navi himself, I would submit, agrees with your consideration that there is such a thing as divine values. Because the Navi Yirmiyahu tells us, as the backdrop, Yavi Yirmiyahu is not exactly the most cheerful prophet, so occasionally he has some criticism. And he tells us how, on page 1, Ubonos Bamos Habal, they built these foreign god sacrifices, Lisrofas Benayim, to burn their children. What are these things? Asherot Sivisi, I didn't command them. Velo Dibarti, I didn't speak of them. Velo also Alibi, they never came upon my heart. So Asher Lo Tzivisi, I understand, God sometimes commands us things. V'Asher Lo Dibarti, sometimes he teaches us, he tells us things. But sometimes there are simple things that are lo also alibi. Somehow they're on God's heart. What is the unkelus, the targum, it's not exactly unkelus. V'lo rava kodamai, it's not my wish. These aren't my set of values, folks. What you're doing is not within the purview of divine values. So let's start with descriptive. So I'll tell you the first story. The first story, it appears in, not in your sources, it appears in Sefer Bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram Avinu, I have good news for you, you're going to have a child. But then a couple minutes later, he has some other news. There's a group of cities, five villages, called Sodom and the environs, and they are unbelievably wicked. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to destroy these cities. So Avram Avinu, Vayigash Avraham Vayomar, Ha'af Tispet Tzadikim Russia. I can't believe it. And I ask you to consider this for one moment. We're accustomed to reading this story, but do we take a step back and think, wait a second. we should have responded differently. Avraham Avinu should have said, Gevaldik! Great! Should have quoted the pasuk in Mishlei, Ba'avod Rishoyim Rina. When the wicked are destroyed, we celebrate. But that's not what happens. He protests. He says, HaKadosh Baruch, I'm not cool with this. This is not okay. Says the great Gaon Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was the final Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin Yeshiva. Just a backdrop, a little bit of understanding who the Netziv was. The Volozhin, which was in Lithuania, is like the mother of all yeshivas today, except for a handful, let's say Telz and Wayu and Merkas Harav and Brisk are all from the same family. They're all from Volozhin. The final Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, Volozhin closed in 1893 or 1888, something like that, was Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was a prodigious Torah scholar, and he was married to the granddaughter of the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, Rav Chaim Volozhin. It was his granddaughter who married the Netziv. So the Netziv has a commentary on Chumash called Hamek Dover, one of his several Sfarim. And in the Hamek Dover, he says, wait a second, there's something descriptive about a divine value, it's our words, in this story. Says the Netziv on page 2, you want to know what the title for Sefer Bereishis is? Sefer Bereishis is called by the Nevi'im, called by the prophets. It's Nikra Befi HaNevi'im Sefer HaYashar, in the bold on the top. Why is that? Yashar has the connotation of equity, of equality, of upright. And he says, because the Avos were Yashar, they had this trait, this value of equity. I underline. V'zeh HaYashevach HaAvos. This was the great pride of the Avos. They weren't just righteous people. And they loved Hashem. They had this incredible love for the Almighty beyond comprehension. They were also equitable. They treated the non-Jews, afilu ovde elilim, even the worshippers of idols, mechuarim, the despicable idols, mikol makom, hayu imam be'ava, v'chashu litovasam, ba'asher hu kiyom abriya. They wanted the best for the welfare of these people, even if they were wicked, because they're God's creations, they're other human beings. Kamo sha'anu roim kamo hishtateach av mavinu lispalel al sodom. Avraham Avinu, this description that the Torah gives us, teaches us the value of treating all people, whether you agree with them, disagree with them, even if they're over the Alilim, says the Netziv, you got to treat them with equity. You got to be Yashar. That's one story of Avraham Avinu. But then the Chumash moves on. Avraham Avinu goes to Gerar, and in Gerar, he meets Avimelech. Avimelech is the local king. I'm fast-forwarding in the Chumash now to Perek, end of Perek Yotes, Perek Chav. Avimelech steals his wife, and then he apologizes at the end, a big apology. He says, Vayom Avimelech, hine artzi lefanecha, batol be'inecha shev. And he says to Sarah, here's elef kesef, here's a few dollars. After having kidnapped his wife, he comes back and he says, I'm sorry, here's a few dollars. How does Avraham respond? Vayispalel Avraham Elho Elokim. Unbelievable. I don't know how to translate this into English, but there is a Yiddish expression, and it is to fargin. I don't know how to translate that. To fargin means when somebody ran over my azaleas with their SUV, and they come out of the car, and there's nothing to do now, because the azaleas are fallen, I have to go right back to Home Depot. But they apologized. So I accept their apology. I'm willing to forego, to forgive, to say, okay, we can move on. Says the Rambam, you look at this story, that describes this value of forgiving. Says the Rambam in the next page, on page 3, the Rambam we know is the great architect of Halacha, in a practical sense, in his Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam lived, the best way to remember, I've said this before, the Rambam lived less than a half hour. The Rambam lived from 1135 till 1204. He was born in Cordova, but he spent most of his life in Egypt. So the Rambam composed the Yad HaChazaka. In Hilchos Beos, he talks about in the various ethical and moral character traits.
And here there's a context called tochacha, of rebuke. Says the Rambam, im chazar, the bottom right bracketed, im chazar ubikesh mimenu limchol lo tzarech limchol. If someone comes to an Erev Yom Kippur and they sincerely regret, they sincerely apologize, they ask your forgiveness, says the Rambam, you gotta forgive. You gotta fargin. Why? V'lo yehi hamochel achzori, says the Rambam, shenemar vayispalel Avraham el ho'elukim. Just like Avram Avinu was willing to move on, he was ready to forgive Avimelech with his apology, whether it was a great apology or not a great apology, the Rambam says that's the way we have to behave. We have to have that value as part of our value system. And one more story, yet again, about Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Perakov Beis, again in Parshas Vayera, Vayehi achar advar mo'elev olekim niso es Avraham. And what does he do? Kachna es bincha es yechidcha. This is the Akedah. So what's our response to an overwhelming nisayon, the greatest of all tests? So Avram responds, Vayashkem Avraham baboker. Avram gets up in the morning. Says the Gemara in Yuma on page 4. We know a principle that guides everything we do in life, says the Gemara. Zrizim makdimin mitzvos. It's a value. It's a value that we could call alacrity. We do things with a quick step. We're not lounging. We're not lazy. We're on it. How do we know that? V'sheneemar vayashkem Avraham baboker vayachavosh. Avram got up, not in the morning, early in the morning. Vayashkem has the connotation of early in the morning. So these are three instances, all associated, I would say, with Avram Avinu, where the Torah describes values. It just gives us the story. And when you read that story, says the Rambam, says the Gemara, says the Netziv, that's what you draw out. You draw out a set of values that are going to guide our life. And these values, what are values? Values are not specific laws, but they're principles. They're principles that inform everything we do. So now the way we interact with others is going to be with equity. The way that we interact with others is going to be farginin. And the way we interact in general, the way we conduct ourselves is going to be with this kind of alacrity, this spring in our step, so to speak. And there are many more examples of this, but this is one model. Three examples of Avram Avinu. Another three examples from the second, I would say, construct, and that is prescriptive. Sometimes the Torah actually tells us, these are values, put it in your pocket. And who is the champion, I would say, of the prescriptive values concept? That is the Ramban, Nachmanides. The Ramban, one of my personal favorites, great heroes. The Ramban lived just a little bit after the Rambam. He lived in the 13th century. He lived most of his life in Girona, in the north, just the north crust of Spain, just south of Provence. And then the Ramban moved on to Barcelona in 1263, where he disputed Pablo Cristiani in a famous disputation. Subsequent to that, he published his account of the disputation, and he was exiled. The Ramban first was sentenced to death by King James of Aragon, and then the sentence was commuted, he was exiled. So the Ramban was sent on exile. He went alone, without his family, advanced years, almost 70 years old, he traveled to Eretz Israel. So he went by himself. He arrives there, and there, at the end of his life, did he compose his commentary on the Chumash. He had previously composed poems, commentary on the Talmud, and several other works. So the Ramban is the champion, I would say, of the prescriptive values construct. If you look on page 6, says the Torah, here's the first of the values. Not on page 6, let's go to page 5 first. Vayadabra Hashem al Moshe Lemor, tell everybody, V'yomarto aleim, kedoshim to you. Be sanctified. Sanctity is a value. So that's a value, sanctity. Well, what does that mean? So the Ramban, Nachmanides, in his commentary, explains beautifully what the role of this value is. Because the Ramban points out on the top left where I underlined, he says, if you just follow the strict guidelines, the strict constructs that the Torah gives you, hine yiye novo birshus haTorah. A person, he says, who drinks all day, well, he makes a bracha, no problem, bracha rishona, bracha achrona. And he stuffs his face with meat all day. And he does nothing constructive except for being involved in filling his own desires. That's all he does. But he made a bracha. He davened shachris. He didn't murder anyone on the way. So what's the problem? He would be vulgar. He would speak, says the Ramban, imagine, he would speak in an undignified manner, the way they speak out on the street. So where, tell me, where does it say in Shulchan Aruch? Where does it say I can't talk like that? Where does it say I can't act and live like that? Says the Ramban, this value, kedoshim to you. It's a prescriptive value, v'tziva b'dovar kloli, says the Ramban in the second underline. He commanded us in this catch-all concept, shenia prushim min amosaros. Don't go overboard. Sanctity means, almost in a certain respect, modesty. Don't eat too much. Don't spend your whole day at the kitchen table. Don't obsess over food. Don't become vulgar. Sanctity means be elevated. Now that's going to take different forms. Every value is going to play out practically in different ways. The same way that the descriptive values, there is no one scenario, but when you go to the bank, you're going to play that out. The same thing here. The Ramban is telling us that the Torah is not telling you exactly how this is going to play in your life. You have to interpret it. But the concept is it's a prescriptive value. Similarly, the Torah tells us on page 6, yet another prescriptive value. Don't take revenge. That's pretty specific. Lo sitor, don't hold a grudge. Says the Torah, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha. Love other people like yourselves. Fraternity. Not only is there sanctity, there's a value in fraternity. But again, we take these values and you play them out. The Gemara in Sanhedrin raises an interesting question about a particular nuance of Misas Bezdin. There were cases in the old days when the Rabbonim, the Bezdin, had the right and the responsibility to carry out capital punishment. So there's a discussion in the Talmud, what way, there are four different ways, what way is appropriate to kill someone through beheading? That's one of the four Misas Bezdin. So the Gemara discusses, should it be on a block, should it be with a guillotine? And the Gemara says, you know what, I'll tell you, it comes to a particular conclusion, and it says, you know what the motivating factor is in determining the method of death? V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha. Baror lo misa yafeh. At least give the person a dignified death. What do you mean? He's a Rasha Marusha. That means that he was told by a pair of witnesses that if you do this, you will be put to death by Beis Din. And the Gemara says he must say, I don't care. I would rather die. Yatir Atzmo Lamisa. But it doesn't matter. The fact that he's a Rasha, he's a Rasha Gomor, he's not going to be buried in the cemetery with other people, doesn't matter. Because for us, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha means you still have to maintain that value of fraternity. You can't kill him in an undignified, bizyonistic way. And the third one, again, the Ramban on page 7. Similar to Avram Avinu, but in a different context. Says the Torah, V'yosiso ha-yosher v'hatov be'enei Hashem. You got to do the right thing. What does it mean to do the right thing? So it depends on the context. When I was in college, so there was a guy who used to work in the caf serving the food. And there were two things in front of him. There was a thing of greasy deep-fried French fries. And then there were vegetables. So he used to have this mantra of do the right thing. He was Dominican, but he used to say, V'yosiso ha-yosher v'hatov, do the right thing. His name was Marco. Should live and be well. He used to tell us, do the right thing, eat the vegetables. Now, whether we listen or not is a different thing. Says the Ramban, no, it's not so much about vegetables. It is, again, the Ramban puts these two values together, and he says these are general principles that inform the way you act. And these values play out, again, in a practical sense. The Gemara says in Bava Basra, imagine the following scenario. So two people own fields. And imagine these are the two contiguous fields right here. So Reuben and Shimon own fields, and Reuben is going to sell his field. And here comes a bid from Levi out of the middle of nowhere. He wants to buy this field. So the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us there's a principle called Dina de Bar Metzra. Dina de Bar Metzra means that Shimon, who is the adjacent property, has the first right to buy that field. Ma patom? So the Gemara says, because if Shimon is looking for a field, and he has a property here and a property over there, So that's going to be very inconvenient for him. But if he's looking to add to his field, so the Gemara says, you should give him the right to buy the contiguous field first. Now, what's the source of that? What's the source of that? Where does that come from? So the Gemara assumes that it comes from the Asisa, Yashivar Tov. Says the Ramban, this is a mitzvah klolis, a prescriptive value, but again, it's going to play out in a very practical way. Each of these values in our own lives are going to find some way to play out V'asisa Yoshev HaTov, doing the right thing. In this context, it's specifically in a financial context. Doing the right thing, even though from a legal standpoint, there's no other place in the Torah where it says, I have to sell the field to my neighbor. Where does it say that in Shulchan Aruch? The answer says the Ramban is now it does, because you have to do the right thing. This is essentially the value of don't be a jerk. How do we park? Where do we park? You've got to do the right thing. So this is the second suggestion. Not only are there descriptive values that inform how we behave, not only there are also prescriptive values that we are told these are values, but now I'd like to suggest an inductive model. And this is not my own. There is a Kloisenberger Dayan in Eretz Yisrael whose name is Rav Osher Weiss. Rav Osher Weiss is a magnificent human being and a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a Gaon Adir, who has written a collection of Sfarim that are published called Minchas Osher. Yes, questions, comments, observations.
The last two are prescriptive?
The last three. We've got Sanctity, that was Kedoshim to you. We have Fraternity, that's V'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, and we have Integrity, that's V'asisa Yoshev HaTov. So it says, yes. Prescriptive means that the Torah tells us, it prescribes. The Torah is, so to speak, a giant pad. It's a giant pad that the Almighty wrote down the prescription and just handed it out. Anybody, now you have to be careful, let's be mindful, both in the descriptive, especially in the descriptive area, you have to have the right doctor to figure out how to use the prescription pad. You have to have a number. If you don't have a number, so oftentimes you might miss the diagnosis, the prescription. So we look very often, Chazal, what is the purpose of a Medrash? Most Midrashim are there, Midrashi Agada, are there to take the descriptive models that are offered to us in the Chumash and draw out the lessons by way of homilies. That's the purpose of most Midrashim. So they're taking that first group and saying, let us tell you what it means by this story. And oftentimes, by the way, there are conflicting Midrashim, different approaches that teach different values, even from the same story. But it's up to us to further our study, to appreciate what these values are. Any other questions, comments, or observations? Yeah?
What did they do in the story when Abraham lies, where they ask who that woman is, and he says, my sister? Whether he is dubbed or what's described or what's described, or something like that?
So there are many stories like that. The story with Yaakov, the story with the brachos with Yitzchak, with Esav, all of these are all very important stories, and that's what I would encourage everybody to do, is to look at those stories closely and see how the commentators saw the rich, multi-layered level of interpretation. Very often you will get different values from different commentators from the same story. So I would say you could take this as a model to go back and analyze various stories especially through the Midrashim, and see how the Midrashim, it's a terrible misunderstanding of Medrash, as if to say the Medrash is presenting some kind of fairy tale. The Medrash is a very creative, genius way of teasing out some of these ideas. And sometimes it's hard for us because they use psukim from ksuvim. Whoever read ksuvim, who learned ksuvim, who knows what ksuvim is. So they're using these psukim. It's amazing. They knew Tanakh, the rabbis. They knew Tanakh. So they use the Tanakh, so it often gets lost. But the point is that they're doing exactly that. They want to know, what is the message of this? What's the value that we're supposed to take away? And every story is going to have its own journey to figure out what the value is. That's exactly the purpose, I think, of many of these midrashim. So the last category, says Rav Osher Weiss, is what I would call the inductive category. And this is perhaps the most innovative, the most intriguing. There is a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis, which is on your source packets. It's page 8. The Gemara says, Tsar Balei Chayim, according to one opinion, cruelty to animals and ethical concern, the concern for animals, is d'oraisa. Now this is subject to the debate of the Talmud here, but there is one opinion who holds that the responsibility to have a concern for the welfare of animals, that's a biblical responsibility. That's a din d'oraisa. And that, again, every value is going to play out practically. The Gemara says at Shabbos, that has a nafkamina, has a practical application for an obscure case, but it's on the books, of an animal that somehow fell into a river, and you have to violate an issur derabbanan of what's called mevatel kli, disabling the use of a vessel on Shabbos, which the Gemara assumes is a rabbinic restriction. And the Gemara says, well, that rabbinic restriction of disabling the kli for the welfare of the animal is okay. Why? Because the welfare of the animal, Tzar Balei Chaim, is a din d'oraisa. Now, I want to know, how did the Gemara know that Tzar Balei Chaim is a din d'oraisa? Where is the pasuk that tells me that caring and concern for animals is a din d'oraisa? So the Gemara has no pasuk. No pasuk in the Gemara. There is none. There is none. That's the answer. There is no pasuk that is quoted for this. So there is a collection that's interesting called the Shivim Mukubetzes. This is a 17th century work by Rabbi Bezalel Ashkenazi, who collected earlier works of the Rishonim that many of them were not available at that time. So Rabbi Bezalel Ashkenazi, in this daf, it's called the Shivim Mukubetzes, above Metzia, he gives you a bunch of options. Rashi, in the end of Shabbos, suggests that maybe it's learned from the mitzvah of prika. Prika means if you see an animal which is it's loaded down with a heavy burden, ozov tazov imo. You have to help unburden the animal. But wait a second. Is that talking necessarily about all cases of Tzar Balei Chaim? It's specifically about one case, and there's a big discussion about whether the burden is too heavy, it's not too heavy. So he quotes another opinion. He quotes opinion of the Ravid. The Ravid was the Ravid number 3, Rav Avram ben David of Poskier, who wrote the glosses on the Rambam. So he quotes the Ravid, says the Ravid, you know where he thinks it's from? Maybe it's from the pasuk, lo sachsom shor bedisho. Do not muzzle an animal as it walks through the threshing field. Quotes a Ritva, just give me 1 second, 20 seconds. Quotes a Ritva, who says that it's a halacha l'moshe misinai. It's just a tradition. Says Rav Asher Weiss, he adds in an essay, he collects 11 different options of a source for Tzar Balei Chaim. So how do I understand this? What are we getting from this? What we're getting from this is that there's a third category of Jewish, of divine values, that if you peer through the lattices, if you look carefully, if you put together all the clues, you will come up with a value, and this value is operative even min haTorah. Because all the Rishonim understood that there is a value here. There's Tzar Balei Chaim. The Gemara has this. We just have to figure out where it comes from. So wait a second. If we put together the principle of lo sachsom shor bedisho, of not muzzling the animal, with the responsibility to be porik the animal, and maybe a bunch of other mitzvos that have something to do. So what is the end result? The end result is, we've learned something. We've learned a value. Inductive reasoning means you take specific incidents and you step back and you make a generalization. It's the opposite of deductive reasoning. Inductive means we look at the mitzvos HaTorah and we just start putting them in a line, in a jigsaw puzzle, and we say, it must be that the Torah places a value on the welfare of animals. Similarly, take a look at page 9. Says the Rambam, based on the Psukim in Chumash, Migrashei Ha'orim, believe it or not, the Torah describes urban planning. I'm sorry, before I move on, did someone have a question? Yes. Yes, this Pasuk, Ozov Tazov. So that's Rashi Shita, that Rashi learns it from that pasuk. But the Ravid is not, he doesn't think that's enough to tell you that in general, Tzar Balei Chaim is d'oraisa. That's the mitzvah of prika. Lefrok means to take out the burden, take off the burden. Exactly. Anybody else had a question on this? Okay. Says the Rambam, in writing in Hilcha Shemitah v'Yovel, he quotes the urban planning psukim, that 3,000 amas around every city is what's called the migrash. It's supposed to be just for trees. It shouldn't be somebody's vineyard. It shouldn't be somebody's garage. It shouldn't be somebody's alley. It's just park space. A belt of 3,000 amas around every city. And the Chiddush of the Rambam is on page 10. This is not specified in the Chumash, but the Rambam's opinion is on page 10, V'chein b'shar ora Yisrael. The Rambam's chiddush is that not only the cities of the Levim, where the Torah describes this belt of planning of parkland around the city, even in every other city, you have to have open spaces. You have to have green spaces, says the Rambam. Says the Gemara. It says it about Yerushalayim, but the concept is here. Says the Gemara on page 11. There are many halachos that apply to Yerushalayim. One is, Ein osin ba, in the underline on page 11, Ein osin ba kivshonos. You're not supposed to have a kiln. You shouldn't have an oven in Yerushalayim. Why? Mishum kutra. Because of the soot. Says Rashi, Oshon shemashchir es hachoma uganayhu, on the left side. Soot that blackens the walls and it's not nice. It's a great book I have. I bought it because when I was at my in-laws, and I can acknowledge the presence of my mother-in-law, so she had this book on the shelf. It's an old book from the 70s called Challenge. And in the back of this book, Rabbi Aryeh Carmel and Cyril Dom, they have a piece on environmentalism. They say, you want to know where do you learn the value of environmentalism in halacha? He says, again, you use your inductive cap. You say, wait a second, there is a din of, you're not allowed to be mazik someone in Rishus HaRabim. I didn't quote all the halachas here. You can't just put up a building in Rishus HaRabim and leave all the garbage in the public square. And you can't dump soot all around. You can't have pollution. You have to have green spaces. What do all these things get to? If we use our inductive reasoning, we say, ah, there is a divine value on protecting the integrity of the environment. We're just about on time, so I'm going to go to page 12 right now for the last of the third suggestions. And that is respect for property. Where does it say in the Chumash? Where does it say in the Chumash that I have to respect your property? Okay. Lo sase gvul reyacha. Don't encroach. But let me ask you this. Is it wrong? Is it morally wrong from a Torah standpoint for me to slash your tires? Is that morally wrong?
Yes.
Really? So the Torah agrees with you. The Torah is the son of Rav, his name is Rav Yaakov ben Asher. He lived in the end of the 14th century in Spain. So he was the first, he was the precursor to the Shulchan Aruch, and the way he organized the Shulchan Aruch on the four columns. Says the Torah in Hilchas Nizakin in Shulchan Choshen Mishpat, in page 12, Kishem sha'asar lignov v'ligzol momon chaveiro, kach asar lahazik momon shalo. Just like I am not allowed to steal from someone else, so too I'm not allowed to damage them. Well, how did he know that? So the Beis Yosef, which is Rav Yosef Kaur, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, in his commentary on the Torah on the bottom, the last line where I put the little arrow, he quotes a Mishnah, Adam Muad Leolam Bein Shogeg Bein Mezid. A person is always liable. Bein Shogeg Bein Mezid. Oh, really? I'm always liable. So fine. So I slash your tires, I have to pay you. But where does it say I'm not allowed to slash your tires? Where does it say that there's an Isser? So the Rishonim have different ways of looking at this. There is a Rabbeinu Yonah, Rabbeinu Yonah of Girondi, again from the Spanish period. He says it's included in the principle of don't steal. If I can't steal from you, I can't break your window. But other Achronim, later Achronim say, no, that's not what it means. Stealing means I take your property into my property. So there is a... There was a big Talmud Chacham who was a businessman. His name was Rav Shmuel Straussen. He lived in Vilna in the 19th century. And his Chidushim, called the Rashash, is published in the back of the Talmud Bavli, the Ram edition of the classic Vilna Shas. So in the back, in Maseches Ksubas, he has an alternative explanation. He says, how do I know that I'm not allowed to damage your property, that there's something inappropriate morally? There's something wrong? He says, I learned it from a different halacha. I learned it from Hashav Teshivei. From Hashava Saveda, returning a lost object. He says, Madach, if I have to return a lost object, so certainly I can't break your object in the first place. How do I know, he says, that Groma Benazikin, Even in a case where I don't break your window with my hand, I set up a system whereby when I move away this barrier, at some point, some dog is going to come in. A dog is going to come and eat up all of your vegetables. How do you know you're not allowed to do that? Hashav Teshivim. Or he quotes another din. There's another halacha that's called Mavriach Nechasav Mipneho Ari. If I see that an animal, a lion, is coming to destroy your property, I have a chiyuv to close the door and not let the lion in your property. It's not my property. The Gemara calls that Mavriach Nechasav, saving someone's property from the lion. So he says, it must be, I can intuit from there. I use my inductive cap to say, if I have to return your object, avada, navada, I can't break your object in the first place. So I'd suggest that these three examples, and he has others, and we could think of others, these are three examples where if you look at the halacha carefully, and you put together the pieces of the puzzle, you come up with a value that's going to inform us in other areas of our life. Just like when we see Hashav Teshivim, Hashavas Aveda, that informs us. So too, when we see other mitzvos, we use them as this inductive measure to figure out the values. So just to summarize, on the last page of the sheets that you're more than welcome to take with you, there are many others, but these are just a handful, and their practical applications are many. The importance of Yashrus from Avram Avinu, the Fargin in the Avram Avinu with Avimelech, Zrizim Akdim in the mitzvos, the way that we engage people in mitzvos and HaKadosh Baruch Hu with alacrity, the prescriptive mitzvos of Kedoshim Tiyu, of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, of Yalsisa V'Yashav HaTov, and finally, the notion of concern for animals, the quality of the environment, and the respect for property. These are all a sampling of different mitzvos that can share with us, can open up those lattices, can peer through the lattices to come up with the divine values. Any questions, comments, or observations? Yes? Well, it would certainly be Aser V'Yashisa V'Yashav HaTov, but it would also be Aser, even in a legal sense, from this Hashiv Teshivim or Gzela. There is one opinion on the books that I saw quoted in an essay, which I didn't look up. I think it was a Mabit in the Kiryas Sefer, but I didn't get a chance to look it up, who says there is no Iser Mazik. But all the other Rishon and Achron, they say, how could that be? How are you talking about it as an Iser Mazik? Okay? At this time, I'm going to invite my colleague Sam Meadow to tell us where we're all going. Everyone is invited to enjoy the rest of their day of learning, and thank you all for coming. Yashar Koach.
All right. Just wanted to welcome everyone again this morning. So we're going to have about a 10-minute break. The next year is scheduled to start at 10:30. You have three different options. If you don't have your handy little schedule, let me know. I'm happy to grab you one. Right across the hall, in the main sanctuary, Mrs. Atara Turoff, on the women's side, if you go across here. The Shir with Rabbi Engel is in the base medrash. So, those not familiar, right across, when you walk in the main entrance, it's going to be on your left. And then the back classroom is through these doors back here. Shoot straight back on the right, and we'll help you direct you around as you're finding your way. And again, help yourself to breakfast, and thank you all for coming this morning. Thank you.